This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. Ira Flatow is away. Later this hour, a look at how just a few degrees of warming is rewiring the food chain in the Arctic. But first, in 2008, the Inupiaq village of Kivalina, Alaska, sued 24 of the world's biggest fossil fuel companies. Villagers charged ExxonMobil, Chevron, BP, and others with destroying their home, a seven-mile-long barrier island in Alaska's Chukchi Sea. Scientists estimate that due to climate change, Kivalina will be underwater by 2025. This week, Kivalina's legal battle finally came to an end. The Supreme Court had declined to hear their case in 2013, and this week the village declared it will not file a claim in state court. Meanwhile, the water there continues to rise, the storms get stronger, the ice gets thinner, and Kivalina's 400 residents must grapple with how to relocate in a decade they're estimated to have left. If you want to give us a call, our number is 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. If you're on Twitter, tweet us at SciFry. Joining me now to discuss the impact of climate change on Kivalina is Kivalina City Council member Colleen Swan. She joins us from there today, where, by the way, it is 13 degrees warmer or so than it is here in New York City. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I also want to welcome in Christine Shearer, who wrote about Kivalina's legal case in her book, Kivalina, A Climate Change Story. She's also program manager for Coal Swarm. She joins us from San Francisco. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First of all, Christine, maybe you can give us a sense of where exactly Kivalina is in the world.
Kivalina is in the northwest of Alaska, above the Arctic Circle. It's a bit remote, so just to give a sense to the listeners out there, when I traveled there from California, I went to Anchorage, and from there, I took another plane to a town called Kotzebue, and from there, I took a cargo plane to Kivalina, and before boarding the cargo plane, they did ask me my weight, so it was a little plane, and Kivalina is on a very thin barrier reef island between the Chukchi Sea and the Kivalina Lagoon.
Colleen, tell us about the people who live there and what they do.
The people of Kivalina rely mostly on what the environment, what the land provides for in terms of food, and basically it's been our way to make a living for hundreds of years. So whatever the ocean, you know, especially the ocean, during the winter months, the ice is part of our landscape because we go out there and we set up camps and hunt. And it's all seasonal. So we were able to see the changes years ago.
Mm-hmm. Christine, tell us more about why the island is disappearing. What exactly is happening to it?
Well, because of global warming from greenhouse gas emissions, the Arctic is warming about twice as fast as the global average. And so sea ice is forming on the coastline later and later in the year. And the lack of sea ice is making the island vulnerable to erosion from storms that occur pretty regularly in the fall. And on top of that, the lack of sea ice means there's more heat in the water in the air to increase the power of the storms when they hit the island. And so that's contributing to erosion.
And Colleen, you have said that you've seen these changes for years. When was your first clue that things really were different there?
During the bearded seal hunting season, which happens in May, June, and July, the men go out hunting while there is still ice out there because the seal obviously need to have a resting place. All sea mammals do, who, you know, like the seals and the bear, the polar bears. And so we have, every year, we cut up the bearded seal, dry them up, store them for the winter, and that provides a winter supply, and that's what keeps us warm in the Arctic. So at first, like maybe about 15 years ago, the season started 2 weeks early, and we didn't notice at first the gradual change until it became 2 weeks early, consistently from year to year, and now it's at a point where we can't really tell, so our people, our hunters, remain vigilant. You keep an eye on things. That's what our hunters do. They keep an eye on the weather, on the ice, on the seasons, because if we don't, we miss the season. Mm. So we've seen a lot of changes over the years. The hardest one to swallow was the fact that our ice wasn't safe anymore for us to set up whaling camps.
The ice isn't safe, but then also the worry about the impact of these storms and sea level rise. How big an impact has that been?
You know, our people, we just had a minor storm last fall, and I'm one of the first responders if anything goes wrong, so I keep an eye on things too. And when we got that storm last fall, I decided I'm just going to go to sleep. I'm tired of worrying. You know, I want to get some rest. And the next morning when I woke up, I saw the impacts from a minor storm and how quickly, as the storm started to go away, how quickly the water rose, and realized, you know, that was a very dangerous thing for me to do, to sleep, to not, you know, to not face the reality of that night. And you know, that's I realized this is what climate deniers do, not us who face the reality every day. We wake up to it. There was never a debate for the people of Kivalina. So we just wake up to it every morning. We depend on what the landscape, the ocean, everything provides for us.
We're talking,
it's something we are very familiar with.
We're talking with Colleen Squan from Kivalina, Alaska today. It is a small town in Alaska that faces the prospect of being underwater as soon as 2025. We're also speaking with Christine Scheer, who wrote a book about Kivalina. And this lawsuit, Christine, that we mentioned earlier, maybe you can talk about the basis for that 2008 lawsuit, which now it seems has gone nowhere. Tell us a little bit more about what the villagers were looking for and why this legal battle came to an end.
Sure. In 2008, Kivalina filed a legal claim against 24 fossil fuel companies for public nuisance, which is unreasonable harm. And they charged them for being amongst the world's largest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions. And what they were seeking was damages, their needed relocation, because by that point, several government reports had stated that Kivalina needed to be relocated due to climate change. And so they were seeking their relocation costs. And then they charged a smaller subset of the companies with conspiracy and concert of action for attempting to create a false debate around climate change science. And in their lawsuit, they cited internal documents from companies showing that they had funded studies not to improve the science of climate change, but to deliberately create doubt and confusion about the issue. And in doing that, they took a playbook straight out of tobacco.
Hmm. Colleen, your village originally voted to relocate as far back as 1992. Is it just cost? Is that why this hasn't happened yet?
Yes, it is mainly cost because of the comparison to the sea level. So there's worry that it is flood prone, the site that the people selected, but it's not. The history goes way back. Our people's knowledge goes way back, hundreds of years.
Are you looking for help from the federal government? We understand that the Secretary of the Interior visited Kivalina earlier this week. What was the visit about, and what did you hope would come out of it?
The visit was mainly about getting information from hunters and elders about the environment. And her visit was very timely because of the reason why our case got thrown out of court, because they said this was a political question. And so we have no choice but to go back to the government. And they, you know, whenever we bring up relocation or climate change and ask, where do we go to talk about this with the government? And the reply always is, you know, there's no agency set up to address those two questions.
And Christine, talk more about that. I mean, what kind of structure is in place for a community like this facing this issue? Where do they get help?
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. So for disaster management, most of the policies are around after a disaster occurs and a disaster declaration is made that releases some funding. And then it's usually to help a community relocate where they already are at. But with the community like Kivalina, they need to be moved, they need to be relocated. And we don't really have the policies in place to relocate a community, and we don't have a federal agency in charge of that. And so it's really fallen on the people of Kivalina and other Alaska Natives in a similar situation to try to put that together themselves. And, you know, that's quite a task. And so, if anything, I hope the visit of the from the Interior Secretary helps put that into motion, starts making this happen. We need that in terms of climate adaptation policies.
Colleen, we have just a moment left, but I wonder if your village had to move, would things be much better elsewhere? I mean, all of your region there is changing so fast.
You know, I asked the same question about 10 years ago, because Alaska is about 70% wetland, and, you know, the probably the best place to move to would be on top of a mountain, but that can't be done. So you build up the ground with a gravel pad, and that was our intent. But the cost is very high. And then the permafrost is melting, so there would have to be special consideration given to that to make sure that whatever gravel pad you put doesn't melt the permafrost.
And Christine Scheer, do you see other instances of towns like this? And could another lawsuit like this potentially bring attention to communities like Kivalina?
I think in terms of climate change, inevitably the damages are going to keep increasing. More communities, more cities, more states, more tribes are going to have to deal with trying to help people who are being affected by climate change. I think more lawsuits will be filed. And I think it might get to a point where fossil fuel companies might find it's less costly to settle than to keep fighting these lawsuits.
Christine Scheer is author of Kivalina, A Climate Change Story. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to Colleen Swan, Kivalina's relocation coordinator and a member of the city council there. You can find photos of Kivalina at our website. Go to sciencefriday.com/Alaska.